Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNRadio.com.
And good afternoon, good day. Welcome to today's edition of Backbeat Radio for October of 2019 here on HealthyLife.net Radio. I'm Jay Cruz checking in. Backbeat Radio comes to you once a month, currently on the second Friday each and every month, 9 a.m. Pacific time. Could be a movement of Backbeat Radio coming to another time and day here on the network, but will always be on the podcast on-demand link. Stay tuned to Backbeat Radio, of course, here on HealthyLife.net for updates on when our potential new time might be. You can always follow Backbeat Radio on Facebook, Jay Cruz Backbeat Radio Show. We also have a Twitter page, but I don't really use it for very much, but Backbeat underscore radio is the page for that. Well, a little bit of sad news. Last month in September, pretty much right after we put the wrap to the Backbeat Radio Show, news broke that legendary rock and roll star Eddie Money passed away due to esophageal cancer. He had been diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer, esophageal cancer, and shortly after that was made public, Eddie lost his battle with cancer and a lot of years of shows on the road. Of course, Eddie Money most recently had the TV show on Access TV, kind of a reality show focusing on him and members of his family, mainly son and daughter, in his current lineup and current band. Eddie Money, definitely a Bay Area music legend. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. If you grew up there, Eddie Money was maybe more of a soundtrack to our lives in that part of the world than maybe some other places. Of course, Eddie did have a number of hit videos during the MTV era, but the Bay Area was pretty much a big home for Eddie Money, managed, of course, by the legendary manager Bill Graham until his passing in the early 90s. Had a number of chances to meet Eddie Money over the years after, you know, going to concerts and buying his albums as a kid and hearing him on the radio. It was pretty cool to meet the Money Man, who always had that swag and that vibe, always had a upbeat outlook and distemper when dealing with radio people. Always a great interview, always talkative, and always interesting, man. Definitely a guy who lived the rock and roll lifestyle. And when I say that, that definitely comes with a bit of a dark side. His days in the early years of his career, a little bit cloudy with a little bit too much partying, which led to kind of a catharsis of an album with the No Control album that came out in the early 80s. That featured the song title track No Control, which kind of talked about how Eddie Money had an episode. He's out partying quite heavily, maybe for days, and ended up actually passing out on a street alley somewhere in the Bay Area, San Francisco, and had fallen asleep after leaving wherever he left, and apparently had sort of pinched a major nerve in his leg, sciatic nerve up to his back or something, and caused him to lose feeling in his leg, which sent him to the hospital, and kind of his years of dealing with rehabilitation started pretty soon after that. Eddie Money, always a great interview, always a great performer, and the world is sad that he passed away. A couple days after that, somebody from the same era, Rick Ocasek of the Cars. They were big locally in Boston, but when that first Cars album came out in 1977, it was a game changer, especially for someone like me who was about 12 or 13 when that was hitting rock and roll radio. Was at an age where, yeah, I liked a lot of the classic rock that was being played, but the Cars were kind of a new band and certainly had a new sound, definitely with some elements of good songwriting, classic rock influence, and a bit of the new wave. They dressed a little different. They featured keyboards and, dressed pretty hip. They were kind of representative of a very commercial mainstream end of what was known as new wave or punk rock, if you will. So not quite punk rock, but sort of dipping your toe into that and sort of helped a lot of people open their ears and minds to that kind of music at a time. Rick Ocasek, of course, main songwriter for many years with the band and one of two singers, obviously Ben Orr, bass player and vocalist. He passed away in 2001, has been gone for quite some time. A couple years ago, the Cars inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I definitely think on the strength of their first two albums, they certainly should be a shoe-in. Those first two albums are pretty much must-have. The self-titled debut, The Cars, and Candy O coming shortly after that. That first Cars album, I think there's only like maybe one song on that that was not a major FM radio song on the radio at some time. That's the one that features Just What I Needed, Best Friend's Girl, Moving in Stereo, and pretty classic album there. So Rick Ocasek passing away after a procedure was supposed to be routine at the age of 75. Nothing is routine when you have surgery, and apparently arterial sclerosis, or hardening of the arteries, was what eventually did in Rick Ocasek. He was found by his estranged wife, model Paulina Pereshkova, and the two of them had a pair of kids, and they were tending to Rick after his heart surgery, which was expected to go smoothly, and apparently he passed away due to complications of that. So those two happened in September, and of course the music world reacted quite prominently, many bands doing covers of Eddie Money and Car songs in their concerts since then. And just the last few days, another one has passed away, and that's Cream drummer Ginger Baker. He died in a UK hospital on the 6th of October at the age of 80. Now, while the drum legend's family first revealed his critical health status 2 weeks ago, no cause of death has been revealed quite yet. Family says we're very sad to say that Ginger has passed away peacefully this morning, confirmed the rocker's family on social media. Thank you to everyone for your kind words to us all over the past weeks. Now, Baker has faced a number of issues in recent years, including degenerative osteoarthritis and COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Born Peter Baker in London, 1939, he began playing drums at the age of 15 and went on to become a fixture on the Soho jazz scene just a few years later. In 1962, Charlie Watts, Stones drummer, suggested Baker as his replacement in Alexis Korner's Blues Incorporated when Charlie Watts left to join the Rolling Stones. Baker would last a year before forming the Graham Bond organization with keyboardist Graham Bond and future Cream bandmate bass player Jack Bruce, who has since been passed away for a number of years as well. Now, Baker and Bruce would regroup to team up with, of course, Eric Clapton to form one of the first high-profile power trios in rock history, Cream, in London, 1966. Cream is widely regarded as the world's first rock supergroup. Cream issued three albums, 1966's Fresh Cream, 67's Disraeli Gears, and 68's Wheels of Fire before playing a farewell tour that ended with two shows in London's Royal Albert Hall in November of 1968 and releasing a live and studio set, Goodbye, the following year. Now, when Clapton started working with Steve Winwood from Traffic in 1969, Ginger Baker joined alongside bassist Rick Gretsch as the new supergroup recorded and released their self-titled album debut, Blind Faith, before disbanding after a short tour. Now, reading in Eric Clapton's bio, he kind of felt Cream was doomed when Ginger Baker showed up. Part of the reason Clapton had left Cream, he thought they had become a little too big. That had been his modus operandi. He left the Yardbirds pretty much the day that they hit number one in 1965 with For Your Love. He wanted to be more of a bluesman, pure musician, and not so much into the commercial thing. Cream formed. Obviously, they're a mega super group. And, well, when that band disbanded, Clapton joined up with Steve Winwood. And they started by playing and just hanging out and playing music. Steve Winwood had been in the Spencer Davis group at the ripe old age of 16. So he was kind of a child prodigy on vocals, keyboards, and guitars, but a great vocalist. Him and Clapton were looking to put together this band and had been jamming for a little while, working on writing some songs, getting together, getting to know each other, and hatching the idea for what would be the new band Traffic. Well, Ginger Baker caught wind of this, and Ginger Baker wanted in. So he forced his way over to Steve Winwood's house after he, you know, forced somebody to tell him where they were rehearsing. And Ginger can be quite influential in a abrasive way, if you know what I mean. So he showed up, and as he knocked on the door, according to Eric Clapton and Eric Clapton's biography, the wind was taken out of Clapton's sails, so to speak. Here was Ginger, who he obviously respected as a musician and probably liked to a certain degree as a person, but there was some volatility between the two of them. Mainly a little bit of substance abuse going on. maybe from both sides, but Ginger had been known to, at the time, dabble quite heavily in heroin. Usually not something you want in a bandmate or someone close friend or someone you're counting on to produce a heavy workload. So as this is happening, Clapton describes in his biography that he says he was a little too weak to tell Ginger, no, I don't want you in the band. Steve Winwood was a bit excited to have Ginger Baker in the band, not really knowing so much of the history that him and Eric had shared of the, you know, stuff that Eric didn't want to revisit. So Steve kind of welcomed Ginger with open arms a little more. Clapton was, as he said in his own book, in his own words, too weak to say no. And Ginger kind of slid in. So everything was good. And then they played their first show at Hyde Park, and apparently Ginger showed up a little too under the influence, and Clapton kind of felt even from their first show at Blind Faith was going to have a short-lived run. For more on Ginger Baker, an incredible movie, a little edgy, called Beware of Mr. Baker. It came out in 2010. Documentary on Ginger Baker kind of covers a little bit of all this, and you know, a lot of Ginger's very, sometimes overly brutally honest opinions. He, for one, is great friends with Charlie Watts. That's who suggested he take his place in Alexis Corner's blues band, but Ginger said he hated the Rolling Stones. I mean, imagine that. One of the most popular bands of all time, Ginger didn't like him. There was also the Ginger Baker Air Force, the Ginger Baker drum offs, and, you know, just a lot of brutally honest opinions of Mr. Baker in that documentary. I did meet Ginger Baker one time and saw a little bit of the brutal honesty up front and close. He was drumming for a band in the early 90s that had a bit of a Black Sabbath sound to them. They were called the Masters of the Universe. Had a couple albums that were going on rock radio in the early 90s. My San Jose station was playing the album, and we had them, the band, come by for one of our afternoon tapings for our morning show to be played the next week, let's just say Joe Walsh was wholly responsible for that decision to have bands now record in the afternoon and not at 6 in the morning, because 6 in the morning is not exactly conducive to musicians and the rock and roll lifestyle to show up live for radio tapings, if you will. So Masters of Universe is there in the afternoon, and it's being recorded at a bar/restaurant and a live audience. Even though the show's being taped, there are people present and you know, fans of the radio station that have won tickets for the taping and a chance to meet, you know, various musicians, and this time Ginger Baker. So as the band comes in and gets set up, can't remember exactly what the other members of the band had ordered. Could have been water, could have been beer, could have been anything. Ginger Baker, I specifically remember, ordered a cup of tea. Not such an exotic order, unless you're an Englishman in the United States, specifically San Jose, California. So the waitress comes back with various glasses of, let's say, a couple beers, a couple waters for other members of the band, and a styrofoam cup with what looked like a Lipton tea bag sitting in a hot cup of water. Not what a proper Englishman would call a proper cup of tea. And Ginger Baker went on about a 10-minute demonstration how to make a proper cup of tea, as he said, no, this will not do. What is this? He picked up the bag and proceeded to tear down the American non-ritual of making teas. Like, you guys just get a couple, not even a proper cup. You put some water in it. It's not even hot. How's this tea going to boil? How's it going to steep? He immediately walks back to the kitchen with the waitress, server, and kind of goes through the demonstration of how to make a proper cup of tea. I was there to witness that. So all I know is that, if nothing else, Ginger Baker showed me and a few members of the San Jose Server Society how to make a proper cup of tea. Rest in peace, Mr. Baker. Bit of an anniversary just passed in the last couple days, couple weeks. The Beatles' Abbey Road returned to the U.S. top 10 for the first time in 5 decades. According to Billboard, a series of 50th anniversary reissues has pushed Abbey Road from number 71 to number 3 on the Billboard 200 after selling 81,000 equivalent album units and earning an 803% increase over the previous sales window. Abbey Road had spent 11 non-consecutive weeks at number one on the Billboard 200 back in late 1969 and early 1970 when it was brand new and looking like it would be the Beatles' last album. And it was, and the last appeared in the U.S. Top 10 April 25th, 1970. The 2019 reissues deliver a new mix of the full original sound recorded by Gilles Martin and engineer Sam O'Kell, alongside 23 session recordings and demos, most of which have not been previously available. Heavily influenced by the Beatles, but going in a bit of a different direction with his latest music, Noel Gallagher, main songwriter for Oasis. Well, he's been on his own for quite a while with the High Flying Birds, and they're premiering a lyric video for A Dream Is All I Need to Get By, a track from the newly released EP. This is The Place. Now, the tune is one of three new songs featured on the project, which also delivers a pair of remixes and follows Gallagher's recently issued EP, Black Star Dancing. Noel Gallagher and the High Flying Birds band will once again join U2 in Australia and New Zealand for shows starting next month as U2 continues their Joshua Tree World Tour. So we're beside ourselves, raves the singer. The Joshua Tree 2017 tour was some of the most fun we've ever had, and it'll be an honor and a pleasure to share the stage with our friends and comrades once again. Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds' most recent full-length studio record is 2017's Who Built the Moon. Now, Noel's been kind of going a bit of a different direction. His brother Liam, of course, just released a new album, Why Me, Why Not, on September 21st. Liam got his second consecutive number one album as well. So both the Gallagher brothers doing fine without each other, although a lot of fans still want to see Oasis get back together. It seems that out of the two, Noel is definitely more hell-bent on not reforming Oasis. You know, he was the main songwriter and is actually going in a different direction, probably because he's, I don't know, seemingly tired of writing great hits and anthems that people seem to really love. Obviously, the two of them together make for a better overall band, but as a fan of Oasis, or sometimes a fan of any band, when two of the main singer-songwriter musicians sort of split into different bands, sometimes we as fans get a win-win situation with two groups putting out good music as opposed to, well, just one band putting out music. Now, these guys are both putting out albums every year, every other year, and touring, so there's more action, and, you know, both of them playing the Oasis songs in concert mixed in with their new stuff. So, in a lot of ways, it is win-win to have that situation going on. Well, what do you know? The clock on the wall says it's time to take a break on Backbeat Radio. I'm Jay Cruz. Thanks for tuning in. If you missed the first part of the show or any of our past shows, you can always catch them on the podcast on-demand link here on the HealthyLife.net homepage. We'll be back in a moment with more music news. It's Backbeat Word on the Street today on HealthyLife.net Radio.
Inspiration and motivation is just a podcast away at HRNradio.com.
And we're back. Thanks for tuning in to Backbeat Radio today for the October 2019 edition of Backbeat Radio on HealthyLife.net. I'm Jay Cruz. I know Halloween's coming up this month, which means we're right around the corner from Christmas, so many artists and folks are getting their Christmas releases ready. And, you know, when I think Christmas, I think of things like Rudolph, Santa Claus, obviously shopping, celebrating, time with family, and I guess I'm going to have to start thinking about Judas Priest frontman Rob Halford, because he's got a brand new Christmas song coming out. Great singer. We get to hear his rendition of Hark the Herald Angels Sing as the latest preview of his forthcoming Christmas album called Celestial. It's due October 18th. The project, billed as Rob Halford with Family and Friends, mixes holiday classics with all new compositions as he's joined by a supporting cast that includes his brother Nigel on drums, his nephew Alex, who is son of bandmate Ian Hill, bassist Alex Hill, and on bass, and his sister Sue on the bells. Got to have some bells, not necessarily cowbells, but it's probably sleigh bells and jingle bells. It's a Christmas album, folks. And the twin guitar tandem of Robert Jones and John Blakey. Among the other classic holiday standards Rob Halford will be taking on are Deck the Halls, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, and Joy to the World. Now, in case you're thinking this might be a bit of a stretch, think about it. Most of us did grow up singing Christmas songs as maybe our first entry into music. And a couple of years ago, I picked up a Billy Idol Christmas CD, and it was pretty good. I enjoyed hearing his twist on some of these favorite classics. So Rob Halford with a Christmas album coming out in a couple weeks. Bruce Springsteen has a new release coming out with nothing to do with Christmas. He's now streaming footage of a performance of Sundown from his forthcoming concert film and documentary, Western Stars. Bruce's directorial debut, alongside longtime collaborator Tom Zimney, sees Springsteen perform all 13 songs from his latest album by the same name, backed up by a band and a full orchestra under the cathedral ceiling of a historic, nearly 100-year-old barn. Springsteen's first studio album in 5 years, or barn album, if you will, Western Stars, debuted at number 2 on the U.S. Billboard 200 upon its release in June. The companion documentary project evokes the American West while weaving archival footage and Springsteen's personal narration alongside the intimate performance of the record. Western Stars will debut in cinemas during an exclusive 2-night theatrical release, with shows scheduled to take place 4 p.m. and 7 p.m., October 19th and 23rd. Aerosmith will be honored with the 2020 Music Cares Person of the Year Award in January. Even though the band is made up of 5 members, collectively they are Aerosmith, and in the midst of celebrating 50 years as a band, Aerosmith will be recognized for their considerable philanthropic efforts over 5 decades and undeniable impact on American music history. Considered by some to be the greatest American rock band of all time. Over the years, Aerosmith has shown support for a number of charity organizations around the world, including Music Cares and vocalist Steven Tyler's philanthropic initiative Janie's Fund, which supports young women who've suffered the trauma of abuse and neglect. Now, Aerosmith made a surprise announcement about the honor on stage Thursday night during their Park MGM Las Vegas residency. Music Cares has been saving lives for 30 years, said Deborah Dugan, who is president and CEO of Music Cares and the Recording Academy. The Person of the Year Gala is the pinnacle of the essential work that Music Cares is doing year-round, and is truly magical in the way that it unites and galvanizes our community and inspires others to take action on their own. As we continue to expand our services to people in need, we're thrilled to pay tribute to one of the most beloved bands of all time. Aerosmith has walked the walk when it comes to raising funds to impact music people in recovery, and it is sure to be an amazing evening. The Music Cares Person of the Year tribute ceremony is one of the most prestigious events held during Grammy Week each year. And if you didn't get that from the short statement by the CEO of Music Cares, it is an organization that definitely focuses on recovery, something Aerosmith has been focused on and involved with since the mid to late 80s, and have sort of become a bit of a rock and roll flag bearer for the recovery movements. And without that, they probably wouldn't be celebrating in Las Vegas with a big residency set of shows that they're doing and have gotten to this point. Robert Plant is revisiting his 8th album. It came out in 2005, The Mighty Rearranger. And he's revisiting that on his first episode of the 2nd season of his podcast series, Digging Deep. Everyone's got a podcast now, even Bobby Plant. Launched with the lead single, Shine It All Around, Plant was joined by his band, The Strange Sensation, on a record, which reached number 4 on the UK charts and 22 in the US Billboard 200. Robert Plant will conclude season 2 of Digging Deep with the release of a very special limited edition 7-inch singles box set of the same name on December 13th. Now, the package will include 16 A-sides and rare B-sides, as featured in the first 2 seasons of the online series, with material spanning 3 decades of Plant's extensive solo career. The 8-disc collection also features restored artwork from the original 7-inch releases, packaged in a hardback book. Jimi Hendrix, well, he's been dead for many years, but he's still releasing music. He'll release a collection of 4 historic debut concerts with a band of gypsies in a new box set entitled Songs for Groovy Children, the Fillmore East Concerts. Due November 22nd on CD and digital, with a vinyl release to follow December 13th. A 5-CD or 8-LP package delivers over 24 live tracks by Hendrix, bassist Billy Cox, and drummer Buddy Miles that have either never been before released commercially or have been newly pressed and newly remixed for the 2019 set. Blending their unique mix of rock, soul, and funk, the Band of Gypsies performed four concerts over the course of two evenings, December 31st, 1968, and January 1st, 1970. That would be like a year's long worth of concerts. I'm saying that's a typo. 1969 to January 1st, 1970, to introduce the lineup to fans at the famed Manhattan venue, the Fillmore East. True to his unpredictability, Jimi Hendrix opened his four-show stint with a masterful 11-song set that did not feature a single song he had commercially released. The guitarist would sprinkle the remaining three shows with supercharged reworkings of favorites such as Stone Free, Purple Haze, and Fire, alongside newly developed Sonic Fair as Machine Gun. Kind of a protest on the Vietnam War, if you will. The original 1970 Band of Gypsies album was edited and sequenced from songs performed during the two Fillmore sets on January 1, 1970. Subsequent collections mined more material from each of those performances, with significant portions of live recordings from those nights sitting unreleased for almost half a century, until now. Produced by Janie Hendrix, Eddie Kramer, and John McDermott, Songs for Groovy Children, the Fillmore East Concert is being previewed with a video trailer and audio of the previously unreleased track, Message to Love, from the second New Year's Eve performance on the collection. And a bit of Metallica news. You may have not heard, James Hetfield is taking time off from the band and all Metallica-related things to go into rehab. Again, it's been about 15 years since he first did that, and he felt it was time to go back. So everyone was wishing him a healthy recovery and hoping that all is well in James Hetfield's personal life. As far as his day job with Metallica, the band is streaming footage of their 1997 track The Memory Remains from a pair of live concerts with the San Francisco Symphony as a preview to theatrical screenings of their new concert film, SNM2, Symphony and Metallica, Number 2. Now, Metallica were joined by the orchestral outfit on September 6th and September 8th to deliver an identical 20-song set list over both nights as the pairing officially opened the new Chase Center in San Francisco, California, future home of the Golden State Warriors. Now, ahead of its worldwide theatrical premiere October 9th, Metallica just hosted a contest for fans to attend a series of advanced screenings of the film in three cities this weekend. In response to the two SNM2 shows earlier this month at San Francisco's new Chase Center, has been nothing short of mind-boggling, says the band. We had the most incredible time with the San Francisco Symphony, and now cannot wait to share it with the world on the big screen. Saturday, October 5th, there were three special preview screenings, one in London, one in New York, and one in Los Angeles. And Fleetwood Mac will wrap up their 2018-2019 world tour with a newly announced November 16th date at the T-Mobile Arena in Vegas. The series, which kicked off last fall in Tulsa, Oklahoma, saw Fleetwood Mac deliver more than 80 performances across eight countries on the track while adding Neil Finn and Mike Campbell to the lineup after firing longtime guitarist, vocalist, songwriter Lindsey Buckingham early last year. When we started this tour, says Mick Fleetwood, I was quoted as talking about the amazing collection of songs that are performed with a unique blend of talents, and it has proven true every night at every show across the globe on this tour. Mike and Neil and the overall band chemistry really worked and let the band realize that this is the right combination to go forward with in Fleetwood Mac's style. It's got the unmistakable Mac sound. Now, a number of pre-sales are available for the November 16th finale, including an American Express card members one that runs from Monday, October 7th, through Thursday, October 10th, and Live Nation and AXS customers will receive access to presale beginning Wednesday, October 9th. And Stone Temple Pilots are streaming audio of their demo of a rare Beach Boys track as a preview to the October 18th release of a 25th anniversary edition of their studio album, Purple. As Rolling Stone notes, the obscure She Knows Me Too Well, written by Brian Wilson and Mike Love, was the B-side to When I Grow Up to Be a Man in 1964 and appeared on the Beach Boys' Today album the following year. That was recorded during the Purple sessions, explains bassist Robert DeLeo. That song and Pretty Penny were both done during a field trip we did at one of Brendan O'Brien's friends' house. We recorded them in the living room of his house on a 2-inch, 8-track live tape. DeLeo brought the song to the band after being a longtime fan of the tune. Being the youngest in our family, I would listen to the 45s that were always hanging out by the record player, and the Beach Boys 45s were the first ones I listened to, he says. there are certain obscure Beach Boys songs that have always been some of my favorites, including She Knows Me Too Well. When I first played that one for Scott Weiland, he really fell in love with it, so I suggested that we cover it. Produced by Brendan O'Brien and led by the singles Big Empty and Vaseline and Interstate Love Song Purple, the band's second album debuted at number one in the U.S. while going on to sell more than 6 million copies in the country. Now, the 3-CD single LP Purple's Super Deluxe Edition delivers a newly remastered version of the original studio album on both CD and vinyl, plus unreleased versions of album tracks and rarities, including demos and acoustics and live recordings. Def Leppard are streaming video of their September 21st performance of Pour Some Sugar on Me from their appearance at the iHeart Radio Festival in Vegas. The band are also sharing behind-the-scenes footage from the annual event, which saw the band deliver a 5-song set of tracks and included a nod to a pair of rockers who recently passed away. The next song is dedicated to the memory of Eddie Money and Rick Ocasek. Singer Joe Elliott told the crowd at the T-Mobile Arena before the band played their Hysteria hit Armageddon It. The 2-day festival also saw sets by Green Day, Heart, Alicia Keys, Mumford & Sons, Miley Cyrus, and many others.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
And let's continue with more music news. Backbeat, Word on the Street today on HealthyLife.net radio. If you're just tuning in, you can always go to our podcast on demand link on the HealthyLife.net homepage. Download it, listen to it again, share it with a friend. I'm Jay Cruz, and more music news. The Eagles will deliver full album performances of their 1976 classic Hotel California doing a newly announced spring 2020 U.S. tour. Following a recent 3-show run in Las Vegas that saw the Eagles debut the new stage show, which also includes an orchestra, choir, and a greatest hit set, the Eagles will be regrouping for a 12-date series that will open with the first of 2 nights in Atlanta, Georgia, February 7th, and see appearances in New York, Dallas, Houston, and San Francisco before wrapping up in L.A. in mid-April. Now, Hotel California is the 3rd best-selling U.S. album in history, recently certified 26 times platinum by the RAAA for sales of more than 26 million copies. That's a lot. The group's 5th studio record topped the U.S. charts and won 2 Grammy Awards for New Kid in Town and the title track, Hotel California. My personal favorite also on there, Life in the Fast Lane. And speaking of that song, former Eagles guitarist Don Felder shared his story behind Hotel California in a new preview clip at AXS TV has shared during this week's episode of Mixtape. The episode aired last night, Thursday, October 10th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, and in the preview, Felder discussed co-writing the classic song with Don Henley, saying, "We were writing song ideas for what was going to become the Hotel California record. I was just sitting in a beach house in Malibu, and out comes that chord progression, and I had to go record it. So when we got into the studio to record Hotel California, I always thought that Joe Walsh and I would just sit down, we'd hit record, and I'd start off and play something. And Don Henley comes by and says, no, stop, you have to do it just like the demo." Well, it took us 3 days for Joe and I to do the solos at the end of the record, and the labor that it took to get that to that level has been worth it. So I would say Victim of Love on Hotel and Hotel in California were probably 2 of my favorite songs that I wrote for that record. Guns N' Roses performed their 1991 track Locomotive for the first time in almost 30 years during an October 7th show in Wichita, Kansas. And, of course, video of the performance has been shared online. That's until W. Axl has it taken down. The band has only played the rarity from Use Your Illusion 2 a total of 7 times and last delivered it to fans during a February 1992 concert in Tokyo, Japan. The 2 records issued simultaneously, Use Your Illusions Volume 1 and 2, the project debuted at number 1 on the Billboard 200 with both albums certified for U.S. sales of 7 million copies each. So that's 14 million altogether. Now, the Kansas gig was the latest stop for Guns N' Roses on a fall run of dates on their extended Not In This Lifetime tour, which will close out with 2 nights in Las Vegas, Nevada, early November. The band continues the series this week, today, October 11th, in Austin, Texas, and October 13th, an appearance at the Exit 111 Festival in Manchester, Tennessee. Now, I gotta say, people, we can get a little more creative on naming the festivals other than the road you take off the highway to get to the venue. Let's be a little more creative, people. Paul McCartney has an announcement that he will be releasing two never-before-heard tracks digitally and as a special Record Store Day vinyl exclusive. The tracks are entitled Home Tonight and In a Hurry, that were recorded during the sessions for his latest chart-topping album, Egypt Station. And they'll be released to digital music retailers November 22nd. The Record Store vinyl AA side 7-inch picture disc will be released as part of the annual Black Friday event November 29th and will artwork based upon the parlor game Exquisite Corpse, along with a lyric inset. Okay. Sammy Hagar recently discussed what it was like at the end of his time with Van Halen and how much better he likes his current situation with The Circle. He was asked by Clay Marshall for an OC Weekly interview what the dynamics in The Circle are different than with Van Halen. Sammy responded, "Being in a band's a full-time job. It's like a marriage. It really is. It's even worse because in a marriage you can go to work and come back home, but in a band you go to work with your partners and you try to create together, and it's pretty deep. It's really hard to say, but if you don't get along, it's stressful, and it makes the work harder." Now, Van Halen, we got along great for many years. It was just toward the end where it became like, I want black. No, I want white. Okay, I'll go for white now. No, I think I want black now, just because you want white. It was so much of that that it was really stressing me out, and I didn't realize it at the time. I thought, it's just another band. This is what bands do. After I left Van Halen, I said, I'll never play with people that I don't really love to play with again, that I don't like personally. If you're not getting along personally, I'm not going to play music with those kind of people, even if I have to take lesser musicians. Now, the Cabo Wabo years was all great. I just started having fun and created a lifestyle around my music that really made me happy. I love living the hell out of life. Get the most that you can. My philosophy is, live each day like it's your first, and live each night like it's your last, if you can, without hurting yourself. You gotta have a little discipline to live that way, which I do. But I'm really happy with The Circle. Now I have the band that the musicianship is like Van Halen, and it's on that level. And we like to do the same things. We don't have to go out and play 150 shows a year. We just play as many as we want, and it's just a perfect life. A new Lynyrd Skynyrd documentary is recounting the band's deadly 1977 plane crash and the days following the release of their fifth album, Street Survivors. Due on December 13th on DVD and based on the book by security guard Gene Odom, I'll Never Forget You, The Last 72 Hours of Lynyrd Skynyrd delivers first-hand accounts of the crash and its aftermath by Odom and fellow survivors, lead backup singer Leslie Hawkins and guitar tech Craig Reed. Following a performance in Greenville, South Carolina, the Florida band were on their way to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, when their chartered plane ran out of fuel and crashed outside of Gillsburg, Mississippi, when the pilots attempted an emergency landing. The October 20, 1977 incident claimed the lives of Skynyrd founder and lead singer Ronnie Van Zant, guitarist Steve Gaines, backup singer Cassie Gaines, assistant road manager Dean Kilpatrick, pilot Walter McCreary, and co-pilot William Gray. Now, the documentary features original behind-the-scenes film footage of live life with the band before the crash, dramatic reenactments illustrating key dramatic scenes, and high-end CG animations, including a simulation of the plane crash that matches the National Traffic Safety Board report. Rare interviews with four first responders were also captured, filmed on location at the Mississippi crash. Now, based on Odom's book, I'll Never Forget You, the documentary offers with the fond remembrance of one man's journey with Lynyrd Skynyrd while granting unique access to the behind-the-scenes story that changed the group forever. Also a member of the band who was not on that plane, Larry Junstrom, the original bassist and founding member of Lynyrd Skynyrd and longtime 38 Special member, died October 6th at the age of 70. The big man on the big bass has left us, shared 38 Special on social media. He rocked arenas all over the world and succeeded in living his dream. He was truly one of a kind and a congenial traveling companion and a great friend to all with a humorous slant on life that always kept our spirits high. A kind man with a big heart for everyone who crossed his path. Rest easy, LJ, posted Skynyrd. You'll always be remembered as the big man on the big bass with the even bigger heart. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family. Thank you.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
All right, we're just about out of time on Backbeat Radio today. Did want to mention an upcoming show with Alice in Chains guitarist Jerry Cantrell. He's announced he will play a rare solo show at the Pico Union Project in Los Angeles, California on December 7th. Jerry said, "I'll be accompanied by some cool friends performing songs you might expect and others I haven't played in quite a while, and maybe even one or two that I never have," said the guitarist on social media. "Should be a lot of fun and hope to see you there." Now, Cantrell has led Alice in Chains through six studio albums since their 1987 formation in Seattle, Washington. And Cantrell has a couple solo records, including 1998's Boggy Depot and 2002's Degradation Trip. He'll be playing that show December 7th in Los Angeles. Former Journey frontman Steve Perry celebrated the first anniversary of his comeback album by sharing the big news with fans that he plans to release additional music this year. Steve Perry released Traces, his first new album in over two decades, October 5th of last year. On Saturday, he took to the Twitter to mark the 1 year since the album hit stores. He tweeted to fans, "1 year since Traces, my first record in 25 years, was released. Thank you for receiving it with such kindness. More to come, including Christmas music this year." Ozzy Osbourne. He's often in the news. Lately, it's been for a lot of health issues. He's been forced to postpone a European tour for a second time as he continues to recover from injuries and surgeries over the past year. The 2020 shows with guest Judas Priest was initially rescheduled to begin January 31st at Nottingham's Motor Point Arena and scheduled to run to mid-March, with North American shows following starting late May. "So I'm here to give you an update on my condition," Ozzy said in a new video. "As you probably know, or you may not know, at the beginning of this year I had a bad fall, and I screwed up all the vertebrae in my neck and had to have surgery. I've got a lot more nuts and bolts in my neck now than in my car. I'm not dying, but I'm recovering, and it's just taking a little bit longer than everyone thought it would. I'm bored stiff of being stuck on a bed all day, and I can't wait to get out of here and get going again. But you're just going to have to wait a little bit more and be a bit more patient." Ozzy, who recently appeared on the Post Malone single, Take What You Want, and confirmed the completion of a new studio record of his own, will release a solo career-spanning limited edition vinyl box set, See You on the Other Side, just in time for the holidays, November 29th. Led Zeppelin legendary bass player and keyboardist John Paul Jones has a new group called the Sons of Chipotle. All of a sudden hungry for a burrito and a side of nachos. They'll be making their North American live debut performance at the Big Ears Festival next spring. Now, the project features John Paul Jones and Ansi Kartunen, and they made their debut with two intimate shows at Tokyo's Pit Inn, Shinjuku, back on September 3rd and 5th. Now, American fans will be able to see the bands when they take the stage at the Knoxville, Tennessee Music Festival when it runs March 26th through March 29th of next year. Jones shared the following details about the project in July on his official website, saying, "It's incredibly rare to find two of the finest musicians in the world performing in such an intimate setting for what will be a series of remarkable concerts. Both musicians are known to be curious minds, always ready to learn and to discover. When they improvise, borders disappear. They're free to migrate beyond prejudices across continents in a world where walls are being built and people are told where they cannot go. Sons of Chipotle want music to be a place of openness." Now, with that quote, sounds like it's going to be some experimental music. Well, I talked about Jerry Cantrell of Alice in Chains a couple minutes ago and his plans to do a solo show in L.A. coming up in December. Alice in Chains singer Willem Duval has announced dates for a spring 2020 solo acoustic tour of the UK and Europe in support of his newly released album, One Alone. Now, Willem's new album delivers 11 acoustic tunes in a set that is billed as part late-night confessional, part living room concert. After three albums and numerous world tours with Alice in Chains, said Duval, as well as creating the Giraffe Tongue Orchestra album with Brent Hines of the band Mastodon and Ben Wyman of the Dillinger Escape Plan. And, of course, my catalog of albums and tours comes with the fall. I felt the need to peel everything back to the bare bones. This album is strictly one voice, one guitar. It reveals the very core of who I am as a singer, guitarist, and songwriter. Now, William Duvall has appeared on the Alice in Chains last three releases, including 2009's Black Gives Way to Blue, 2013's The Devil Put Dinosaurs Here, and the 2018's Rainier Fog. Tickets for the five-week spring series, which will open in Dublin, Ireland, March 25th, go on sale today, Friday, October 11th. And the Kinks are streaming a new 2019 mix of Australia as the latest preview to the October 25th release of a series of 50th anniversary reissues of their 1969 album, Arthur, or The Decline and Fall of the British Empire. Timely with that Brexit thing going on. Now, the concept record, which told the story of a family emigrating to Australia from the UK, was first drafted as inspired by a television play written by frontman Ray Davies and English playwright Julian Mitchell. "I had become bored with the singles format," Davies told Rolling Stone. "I was tired of doing three or four singles a year, and your whole body of work is judged by what those singles are like." The set features 2019 newly remastered versions of the original record in stereo and mono versions, a disc of demos, rehearsals, remixes, and BBC performances, and a lost Dave Davies solo album. The Arthur 50th Anniversary Package will be available through a 2-CD, 1-CD, 2-LP, and digital editions, as well as a 4-CD Super Deluxe box set that delivers 81 tracks in total, with 5 unreleased alongside 28 previously unreleased versions of older songs. And that's going to wrap up Backbeat Radio for August of 2019. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling your friends about the show. We'll be back in November here on HealthyLife.net Radio. You can always check the podcast on demand link to listen to past shows and check for upcoming guests. And keep tuned for a possible change in time and place here on HealthyLife.net, maybe coming up soon. We'll give you the details when we have them. In the meantime, tune in next month to Backbeat Radio here on HealthyLife.net.